of writing a memoir of his life, the last half of which is about how to be a successful insurance executive. That's mandatory reading for aspirants in that business. But if you're not in the trade, so how much would this book be interesting to somebody not in the trade of literature?
Well, there are certain things that I think are really interesting and applicable to anybody. I mean, he's talking about writers, don't let other people tell you that you can't do it. If you have a passion to do something, do it. And don't believe what people say, because nobody can really know what's inside you.
It's very empowering. It's very, there's an inspirational aspect to it. I always feel very empowered when I read that.
And also, we have to remember about Trollope that he, as somebody who wrote so many books, he didn't really get going until he was in his 30s, and didn't have his first success, which is The Warden, till he was 40. So Trollope in his novels often writes about late bloomers, and he's very fond of late bloomers.
The hobbledehoy, as is sometimes said.
Right. Yeah. So you can be inspired by this book if your life is in a rut, and you feel like you wanted to do something and you've never done it. Trollope writes about that. He talks about all through his 20s. He wanted to write, but he often didn't. Mm-hmm. And in fact, he didn't really turn his life around until he went to Ireland when he was in 26, was it?
Yeah. It's a powerful part of the autobiography that he goes to this remote place as a civil servant working for the post office, trying to introduce the latest postal innovations into Ireland. He goes to this place that is remote, that is wild, that is on the verge of suffering one of the most catastrophic incidents in its history, in the potato famine, and that is looked upon very disparagingly by the kind of people with whom he grew up. And he finds himself there. He finds a vocation, he finds a wife, he finds an identity, he finds everything there.
Well, actually, the wife is interesting because the wife is English, and he actually writes in an autobiography how it was offensive to Irish people.
They wanted him to marry an Irish girl. They wanted part of him, and it's the classic Sir Walter Scott-like narrative where the Englishman would come and marry an Irish girl and unite the nations in that way, and that's what the Irish people, the Catholic Irish, he wants so badly wanted. Yeah,
it's fascinating in the book that he says, up until the time I went to Ireland, my life was a mess. I had never really accomplished anything. Even at the post office, I was on the verge of being let go. I was always late. And then basically, the moment I got to Ireland, everything changed. Now, that might seem unrealistic.
Is it just a change of scenery, as they might say in sports, that did it? Or was there something in Ireland that awakened him? Because I was thinking, if you're showing this book to a student who had never read Trollope, but that you could go to a new place and find yourself the way you can't in the place where you grew up.
I think some of it may have been Ireland. I think most of it was that he was ready to change, that he was ready to get serious about his writing, that he was ready to do more important work, even within the post office. He had been basically typecast. People, just thought of him as this ne'er-do-well. He was late. He talks in the autobiography about how if only he had been given more encouragement when he was in London working for the post office, he might have succeeded. But people just took him for granted as somebody who was never going to do anything. In Ireland, he was able to get a fresh slate, start over. Nobody knew him. He had come to the job with a bad letter, actually, the opposite of a letter of recommendation. But he was told that he'll be judged on his own terms. And from the beginning, he was more serious and more focused. And he did really, really well. I think he needed a fresh start. He needed a new scenery, as certain sports players do sometimes too.
And he also found his literary vocation there. He began, his first novel was The McDermotts of Ballycloran, which is set in Ireland. And he started out as an Irish novelist, though, as he says, he found very little market. And he was gently told by one of his publishers, son, there is no market for books set in Ireland, and we're dropping you, although we've heard you've just completed a novel, and as we've heard that, we might as well take that, but pretty much, you know, it's over because you wrote in Ireland.
And then he wrote Kellys and the O'Kellys, which also an Irish book, and then he wrote the historical novel about the French Revolution. And it wasn't until The Warden, which was his fourth book, that he started to have any success. And he writes about it in an autobiography, people thinking, oh, you must have known so much about the clergy. And he said, no, I didn't know anything, actually. Yeah. He uses the term my moral consciousness to imagine myself into a clergyman's life. So, I mean, I'm sure he spoke to people, he read, he knew things, but he didn't have any firsthand intimate knowledge of clergy.
That's one of the things he says about being a novelist, why he became a novelist, that he didn't think he had the talent to be a poet, that to be a dramatist, he would have had to kind of know people in the theater. And so he decides to be a novelist because to be a novelist, you don't really need any credentials. You don't have to have a university degree. You don't have to have any special expertise. You just have to have that kind of moral and imaginative awareness.
It makes it sound easy. Yeah,
exactly. And so he wrote a novel. He became a novelist for lack of any other option.
But that does make it sound, well, I think there's been a problem with this book and with Trollope's reputation generally, that he does seem like somebody who's not fully an artist. You know, okay, he observes things well, he writes them down, but he's not a serious artist. I think that it's a lot harder than he makes it sound. He is trying to be encouraging in the book, and that's one of the purposes of the book, to encourage people who want to write, who want to do what they want to do, who have a passion to follow it. But
it could be you can be a novelist or how to be a novelist. Yeah. There's that how to self-help.
But there's a lot of the, well, I'm not a genius. I never would even think of calling myself a genius. I'm just a regular guy, basically. And that could be misread. I mean, I think we have to be a little careful when we read that stuff. I mean, I think he had a private sense or a secret sense of what he had accomplished and how good he was. But I think he was afraid to talk about it, even from the grave, because he didn't want to sound boastful. He didn't want to sound coarse. But I also think that he was afraid to tell himself fully, wow, I've done all of this. Because the second you do that, you can get complacent, you can get smug, and you can lose your drive to write.
And he wanted to keep going. He wanted to keep on going, keep on being productive.
Yeah, there's a letter actually he wrote at about the time of an autobiography to a friend where he says, I'm not going to say publicly, praise myself publicly. I can talk about it with my God, basically.
Sure.
But I'm not going to do it in public. I think he was afraid that if he felt too good about his career, that he wouldn't have the drive to write anymore. Or maybe he would write, but he'd be one of those writers that he talks about in the book, who in their later years, they just keep going mechanically. And
Charles Lever, he talks about that, and the Thackeray after Esmond, which Esmond is his all-time favorite book, and then the later Thackeray declines.
Yeah, he calls it one piece of stiff mechanism, the way writers just keep writing even though they're not vibrant anymore, they're not fresh anymore. I think he was worried about praising himself too much and feeling too good about himself. Therefore, he's very modest in the book. I'm not a genius. You can do this. You just have to sit at your desk every day for 3 hours and just keep writing. There's a lot that's very valuable in that advice, but it also makes it seem as if anybody could be a great writer.
There's something quite against what we know of Trollope's religious orientation, but there's something very Calvinistic in that. If you ever say you're saved, then you'll slip into sin. Mm-hmm. Only by constantly reminding yourself you're a sinner is there any chance of salvation.
Right.
And that goes into the idea of the Protestant work ethic. And Trollope had a tremendous work ethic, which blessed him as a novelist and gave him tremendous gifts as a novelist and is one of the things he's known for. But it's also hurt him. It's hurt his reputation, and that's one of the things he addresses in the book, is that in the view of many, his productivity actually hurt him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you can't possibly be a serious writer if as soon as you finish one book, you do the next. Or you can't possibly be a serious writer if you write so quickly and you don't go back and revise and revise and revise. But he addresses those issues in the book, actually, in an autobiography. He says, the work that my best work is the work that I've done fast.
Mm-hmm.
If I were going to take more time to do these things, it would not make for a greater novel. He implies, okay, maybe the sentences could be more polished. I would have fewer errors in my books, but they would lack authenticity or the vibrancy, the aliveness that somehow writing fast accomplishes. And maybe that's why one of the most peculiar moments in the book when he talks about his travel book, The West Indies and the Spanish Main.
He wrote it as he did it, as he was traveling in Jamaica.
His best book, the best book he ever wrote, which nobody... And no reader has ever believed that.
On the basis of that minimal gap between experience and the recording of it, that no sooner did he make this trip than he wrote about it without even a minute's reflection. And that efficiency is what he prizes
about the West Indies. So maybe it's a book that represents the kind of writing that he appreciates or that he is touting for himself. Not facts versus vision. I'm not a writer of facts. Maybe I got a few facts wrong, but in writing at the moment and concentrating for those 3 hours a day when I'm at my desk, that it comes out fuller and richer than it possibly could if I fussed. And again, with George Eliot, who he was very good friends with, he complains that her work, especially her late work, has the smell of oil. Writers who fuss too much about their work, maybe on a certain level for him, for it makes their work more polished, but he feels it takes away something from what spontaneity maybe.
Even Dickens, who he discusses as having too much puppetry in his characterization, Dickens only writes 14, only writes a third of what Trollope does, and Dickens has this huge amount of books.
That's
only
right.
A third of Trollope's output. But in terms of his reputation and of people's view of Trollope, his saying very forthrightly that he wrote for money, and he makes the point that Shakespeare did what he did. He was an actor. He was a playwright. He did his work for money, and that
Titian,
exactly. Even the great artists of the Renaissance, Rubens, and that the artist should not have to abstain from the same motive, which he points out everybody else works in order to provide for their family and to have the means. Even if they want to do charitable work, they have to have the means to do it.
Mm-hmm.
They have to have money to do it, and that it is not dishonorable for any other profession to work in the hopes of making money, but for an artist, it is somehow ignoble. And indeed, when one brings up Trollope to the lay reader who is not an avid Trollopean, they will sniff and say, he was a hack.
Mm-hmm. Right. So the combination of him writing so much, writing quickly, and his emphasis on making money, all of that puts together and makes it seem like, he's not a serious artist. Henry James writing about him after even in a very positive obituary article, making the same point, he's not serious. That doesn't make any sense. I mean, you don't write as much as he did and with as varied a kind of work as he did, if you're not serious. I mean, And it's not just that he wrote novels. I mean, short stories, travel books, biographies. He was editor of a literary magazine. He negotiated postal treaties. And also, he's very, very proud in an autobiography of giving his best to the post office.
Yes.
He's very sensitive.
He quotes his retirement letter, which is this very laudatory.
Right,
yeah.
Which even he says, well, it's probably just official flim-flam, but I can't help myself anyhow. Yeah, but he didn't want people to think, well, okay, he had a day job, but he just sort of went through the motions in his day job, and then he wrote. Which also hurt him because not only is he writing too fast and writing for money and all of this, but then he's praising all that the work that he did for the post office. I mean, what kind of serious would Wallace Stevens have written about how he was giving his best effort every second to the insurance company? I don't know. Maybe he would, but probably not.
And that the interesting thing there is the separation between the work and the astonishment that people are told, the astonishment that people feel when they are told that the author of 13 Ways of Looking at a Blackbird was an insurance executive and that nobody there knew who was a poet, that there were these two separate lives.
Right.
But with
Trollope is not two separate
not
lives.
Not at all.
And in fact, I would suggest that his working at the post office for so many years helps to make him such a great novelist because he was just a part of the ordinary world.
Too many writers
are too cut off. They spend most of their days alone writing, and maybe they go out to dinner at night, but they're not really engaged in regular life the way he was.
He traveled. And this, he writes dedicated travel books, but there's a lot in this book about his travels, and there's the amusing thing of where he finishes one novel and then he begins the Bertrams. What's the novel he finishes before the Bertrams in 1859? Is it Dr. Thorne?
Three Clerks.
Yeah. It was Three Clerks.
Or so Clarks.
Clarks. We should say Three Clerks for those of you across the pond.
I'm using American.
So he finishes Three Clerks and then he begins the Bertrams. And in between, he negotiates a contract with the local pasha, the local Armenian pasha, who was the in charge of the Egyptian Postal Service. And he has this very engaging anecdote about how, after much exertion, he gets the pasha to agree that the Egyptians will transport the mail within 24 hours. Only to be told by the British supervisors that it's better, more convenient for the system that they do it in 48 hours. So all his arduous work with the pasha is nullified. But he just does that in between the two books. And yes, he has a full-time job. He also makes clear he's a member of a lot of clubs. He has a lot of friends. He likes to socialize. He makes clear he likes to hunt, although from what he says, he wasn't very good at it, that his hearing wasn't very good, that he could never hear the animal, but he loved to hunt. He led this very active life.
And let's not take for granted, he seems to have had a very good marriage.
He seems
to have actually been a good father, a devoted father. I mean, he wasn't just ignoring his kids and devoting all his life to writing and his work. I mean, we don't know, but based on how, based on other things we know, and based on how what happened after he died with his sons, his visits to Australia to see
Fred. Goes out to Australia just to see his son.
Yeah, I mean, or the way his first son Henry published this book, an autobiography, after he died with the preface. Henry seems to have been very fond of his father and very respectful.
The preface is a very interesting part of the work, and often for the reader first encountering the book, they will read the preface first.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things the preface does is it lets the reader know of what the author of the autobiography accomplished since the book ended. And it says he attempted to give up hunting. And then the preface goes on to say that Trollope wrote six or seven more novels and wrote the book on Sisera. In other words, produced an oeuvre that for many writers would be enough to have as their total oeuvre to do seven or eight novels and a book of Cicero. That would get you, an article in the encyclopedia at the very least. And yet for Trollope, that's just the tail end of what he finished. And that's very interesting that the reader of the book, the first voice you hear is of that of Trollope's son. And you do